VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us today and what we believe to be a very important program because some of you do listen to us as a podcast or delayed recording. It's important for me to underscore that this program is being conducted live on Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. And ladies and gentlemen, today the World Health Organization has declared the novel coronavirus outbreak a global pandemic. During a media briefing today, the Director General of the World Health Organization said that there are now more than 118,000 cases of COVID-19 in 114 countries, with 4,291 deaths. So far, there have been more than 80,000 cases in China, 12,000 in Italy, 9,000 in Iran. Fox News reported that coronavirus cases in the United States surpassed 1,000 last night, with the virus officially being reported in all but 12 states. At least 28 deaths have been reported in the United States. Governors in multiple states, such as Washington, Utah, Colorado, Florida, New York, and California, and others, have declared states of emergency. Many large public gatherings have been canceled. Schools are prolonging spring breaks or holding classes online rather than in the classroom. Many businesses are having employees work from home. Should this be a time for panic? Are there political games being played over this? What do we know about the coronavirus? What precautions should be taken? Well, joining us today, we welcome Dr. David Stevens, the CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. They are the nation's largest faith-based organization of healthcare professionals. Dr. Stevens has also served as a missionary doctor in Kenya for some 10 years. He has conducted numerous seminars on issues like stem cell research, human cloning, genetics, faith and health, physician-assisted suicide, abortion, and other topics. He's an author. Dr. Stevens, welcome here to the program Crosstalk.
It's great to be with you, Jim. Thanks for the invitation.
So we're going to discuss the coronavirus in as much detail as we can today, but I'd like to begin by asking this question. Is this a time for hysteria? Is this a time for panic across the United States and around the world?
It's not the time for fear, Jim. I mean, people are overreacting. Is this of concern? Yes. Should we be doing some things differently if we're not doing them already? Yes. But, this is a time for our faith in the Lord to shine to our neighbors, to our communities. We as Christians have hope. We know God's still in control. He's told us to fear not. And that includes fearing the coronavirus. In fact, this is an opportunity to reach out and be a blessing to others and help them know why we have this sense of peace.
Amen. Okay, well, let's delve into it. So what exactly is the coronavirus? We hear it as COVID-19. What exactly is it?
Well, coronaviruses have been around for a long time. In fact, they're something we get colds from frequently, but there's been two or three unusual type viruses. The first one of these, coronavirus, was back in 2002. It was called SARS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. It also started in China. And common to COVID-19 and SARS and what we'll be talking about, MERS, is they've all had what we call animal hosts. These actually originally came from bats and then were transmitted to some other animal, which then transmitted it to humans. And these type of viruses that go through animals before they get to us and are novel to us, we haven't experienced them before, we don't have good immunity to. So that's why these have been of greater concern. The severe acute respiratory syndrome was in about 8,000 people and caused 774 deaths, so it was much more deadly than this one. And then Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome, MERS we call it, because those first words are a mouthful.
Yes.
It was 2012, and there were about 3,000 confirmed cases, and about 30% of the people that got that died. So much more serious than what we're dealing with SARS. SARS appeared in Wuhan, China. We've all seen that in the news. It started in a seafood market. Just yesterday, I read a scientific report that they think they may have identified the intermediate host between bats and humans on this virus, and they think it may be snakes. In the Orient, they eat snake. I've been in Taiwan. You can go to the market, and they've dissected snakes out, and you can buy them, and people claim they have all sorts of healing powers. And they think that may be how this got to human beings in China. Now, of course, it's being passed from human to human. So these novel viruses are difficult for our immune systems to respond to, and that's why we're seeing this epidemic.
So what are some of the key symptoms that those with COVID-19 are experiencing?
Well, you actually look like you just have a cold. That's how the thing starts. You have fever, you sore throat, cough, occasionally some diarrhea. Unlike the flu often causes muscle aches and pains, and that is very uncommon with COVID virus. So when should you be concerned? When you should be concerned with this virus, if you get a cold, it's probably a cold. But if you begin to have shortness of breath, that's a key sign to say there's something more serious going on. But many people are going to have this virus and not even realize it unless they're tested. They'll just think it's a cold. We had a speaker yesterday at our headquarters, and he has a cold. And, symptoms that he's having are very similar to coronavirus, but he doesn't have that disease. So if you're beginning to have difficulty with breathing faster, having chest pain, when you're breathing deep, that is a key sign that you may be needing to seek medical attention, especially if you have any type of chronic disease, or you're over 70 or 80. That group is the ones that are going to be at greatest risk with this virus.
Is this more severe than the flu?
It is for some people. In fact, for many people, it'd be less severe than the flu. But it's about 2 to 3% of people that get coronavirus are dying from it. Most of them are elderly, have chronic disease, and are debilitated in some way. And when I say chronic diseases, kidney problems, heart problems, liver problems, asthma, severe asthma, those type of things where they're already immune system is not operating as good as you wish it would. Also, people that are immunocompromised. My wife has rheumatoid arthritis. She takes medicine to lessen that actually suppresses her immune system. So people that are on some sort of therapy that affects their immunity would be at more risk and need to take more care in the situation.
Shortly before coming on this program, I went to the Centers for Disease Control website and looking at the 2019-2020 U.S. flu season, and they've got a lot of estimates from October 1st when the season began through February 29th of 2020, and they indicate there's been 34 to 49 million flu illnesses, 350,000 to 620,000 flu hospitalizations, 16 million to 23 million flu medical visits, and 20,000 to 52,000 flu deaths. So in comparison, this COVID-19 is far less than what we've seen from the flu season.
And I think it's important, Jim, to put this in perspective. That doesn't mean we don't take care, but
right.
The things you do to prevent coronavirus also prevent the flu. I mean, we've had schools closed in our area due to the flu because it's been pretty severe this year. But flu's going to affect many more people, kill many more people, in all likelihood that coronavirus is.
Earlier this week, Dr. Jerome Adams, he's a U.S. Surgeon General, indicated that the average age of death for people from coronavirus is age 80, average age of people who need medical attention, age 60. So elderly are being more impacted by this.
Absolutely, and that's true for most all viruses. Interestingly, this has pretty much spared younger people. We've seen a few cases in children and early teens, but not many. Most people have been exposed to it somewhere overseas when it initially began and brought it back. Then there began to be some spread from person to person, especially on the West Coast. We just yesterday announced here in our local area where I'm based in eastern Tennessee that we had our first case in our area. If somebody had been in one of the affected countries internationally and started getting sick, self-isolated himself, and they're tracing to make sure other contacts are being isolated. The trouble is we can't treat this, and there's no vaccine. Now, are they trying some drugs? Yes, and studies have begun. They're working very hard on a vaccine, and I would expect we're going to have a vaccine late to early this year or late to early next year, they're already making significant progress. Now, you know, used to when we were making a vaccine, you had to isolate the virus, you had to grow the virus, you then had to either attenuate, make the virus less, not as potent, or you had to get a piece of the virus and make a vaccine out of it. Now, they actually got the genetic makeup of this virus in just weeks and have already got vaccines that are going to what we call stage one trials to make sure they're not harmful. Stage two trials, you're actually seeing how effective they are and what side effects. So we're making rapid progress on this coronavirus. Is it going to continue to be around? Probably we're going to see a lot less of this, or even just rarely, once it warms up and gets more humid, because viruses don't well in humidity. That's why we have a flu season that goes from, you know, October into March, and we're likely going to see the same thing with coronavirus. But by next fall, we'll be pretty close to having a vaccine that people can take.
Dr. David Stephen is with us today. He's the CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Stevens, we're hearing a lot about 14-day quarantines, whether it be 14-day quarantine of people arriving in the nation or those on cruise ships, or 14 voluntary quarantine of those, you know, coming in contact with somebody else who's had coronavirus. What about this 14-day effort?
Yeah, they've actually looked at from known times of exposure with patients, and a good number of patients, to when they actually came down with symptoms. And the average of that is about 5 days. But the span of it is 2 or 3 days to very few, up to 14 days. So that's why they've picked the 14-day isolation period. If you don't come down with symptoms by then you're unlikely going to have it, and that's when they release you. We also have good testing and more test kits coming out, and people ask me all the time, Jim, well, how do you do a test? They actually take a swab both of your throat and in your nose. It's not very comfortable because they have to go back pretty far into your nose with that swab, so for a few seconds it feels very uncomfortable, but that is quite accurate, and they are actually producing a lot of these. Over a million test kits should be available within this next week, so being able to test in doctors' offices and everything like that is going to be much quicker than sending it off to a laboratory.
Do you have concern that this issue is being politicized?
Well, very much so, and we've seen that. This is an election year, and politicians want to make those that are running against them look bad if they're already in a position of to say you haven't responded to this well enough. It's also, I think, some of the reason we're seeing some states going very quickly to emergency status. I just noticed one state yesterday declared an emergency, and they have one case in the state. But you don't want to be seen that you're behind anybody else in dealing with this, because it could affect your reelection. So there's a lot of overreaction, though I want to reassure people, we've got an excellent public health care system. Just a week or so ago, I was reading a report from Johns Hopkins School of International Health, one of the premier ones in the world, and they had, over the last 2 or 3 years, actually looked at public health systems in every country around the world and rated them, and the U.S. comes out at the top by a good ways. So we are, you know, health authorities are on this, and we're working very hard to deal with it. It's not going to go away immediately, but we shouldn't be in a panic.
We got to take a break here. Dr. David Stevens, our guest. We'll be back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, now I've heard that sometimes germs evolve. Is this true?
Chris, this is a common claim that some germs acquire the ability to infect certain new species, or maybe they become resistant to drugs. But this is not evolution. In fact, it's really devolution, the loss of ability or the loss of genes to accomplish a certain purpose. A recent study showed that the whooping cough bacteria lost a certain suite of genes, which caused the animal host immune system not to recognize it. Now a new animal can be infected, but is this evolution? What happens here is the loss of genes, not the gain of genes as evolution needs. What results is death, not life. While it doesn't fit the evolution view, it does fit the creation followed by the fall and the curse view, and that's the back to Genesis view.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
Well, today the coronavirus has been declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization. We're discussing it here today with Dr. David Stevens, CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Stevens, as you observe actions that have been taken by President Trump and his delegation here to Vice President Pence overseeing this, the Centers for Disease Control, the Surgeon General, other health agencies, as a medical doctor, are you confident in the steps our nation and our states are taking on this matter? Are we heading in the right direction, or are you raising a flag saying, hey, hold on, we need to do this or that?
No, I think we responded early. In fact, there was a lot of criticism of the president for requiring isolation of people coming back, quarantine. When this all began, he now looks like he made the right move in everybody's eyes, and he did. I mean, when there's no treatment and no vaccine, the best way you deal with this is isolating people that have been exposed and then following up with those who get it to get their contacts isolated from passing it on to other people. And that's being done across the country. The Center for Disease Controls, the National Institute of Health, the administration has, I think, very wisely and aggressively approached this. Some people, you know, say, well, that's not enough because it hasn't gone away. Well, nobody expected it to go away, but what we're trying to do is control it and decrease its spread. And I think we've done that so far and continue to do it, and it gets harder the more people that you have to trace contacts with. Could this thing get out of control anyway? Yes, it could, but I think we have as few cases as we have because of the aggressive control that's happened from the federal and state governments across the country.
So we talked about it's being politicized in some regards, but here we have the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, said that the Centers for Disease Control was caught flat-footed over COVID-19. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I totally disagree with that. They've dealt with SARS and MERS and other serious infections. They've had contingency plans. You know, that's just a political statement. And they are all hands on deck. Go to the Center for Disease Control site, website, cdc.gov. You can find not only what you need to do to protect yourself, but what you need to do if it's in your community, what you're doing if you have somebody isolated in your home that's been put on isolation, and the latest information, the latest data. They're working with public health departments all across the United States. They're getting the vaccine work expedited, and you know, it's excellent work. And with all due respect to Governor Cuomo, he's not a physician, and I don't think he knows what he's talking about on this thing.
Now, let's talk how we do best protect ourselves. How can we stop the spread? How do we mitigate this? How do we protect ourselves?
It's actually good precautions during flu season. It's the same for this coronavirus. Avoid close contact with someone who's sick. What's that mean, close contact? Within 6 feet. The fellow that had the cold yesterday here, as I mentioned in the last segment, we didn't shake hands. He knew he shouldn't, I knew I shouldn't with him, what we normally would do. Stay at home when you're sick. You know, it could be the flu, it could be another virus, except to get medical care. If you go to your doctor and you have these type of symptoms, there oftentimes will put you in a separate waiting room so you're not with other patients. They will put a mask on you. You see people starting to wear masks. Masks do not protect you from this disease. You put a mask on the person who has the disease so they don't spread it to others. But the typical mask, when you breathe, the air comes just out the side, but that keeps you, if you cough, not putting particulates of virus on other people. So masks are for those who are sick. They're not for those, and those who are taking care of the sick wear higher quality masks. So stay home. Cover your cough and sneezes with a tissue. If you don't have a tissue, cough into your elbow. Why? Because your hands are going to be put on doorknobs. They're going to be put on your keyboard and touching other things, you know, the soda machine, whatever. And so you don't want to put any type of virus onto your hands. And the best way to do that is to do it within a tissue, dispose of the tissue, and then wash your hands. And when we talk about washing your hands, how do you do that? Soap and water for 20 seconds. Now, people have a hard time, Jim, knowing how long 20 seconds. There's a couple of little ditties you can do. You can sing Mary Had a Little Lamb in your head, or Jesus Loves Me, I prefer.
Yeah.
And that takes 20 seconds. So you wash between the webs of your fingers, scrub the fingertips, wash your thumb with your other hand, a good hand washing with soap, and then disinfect surfaces and objects, tables, countertops, light switches, doorknobs, cabinet handles. If you've got a virus in the house, or periodically, even if you don't, and what do you use? Just mild disinfectant. The things that Clorox and Lysol and other groups put out for disinfection work well. Plain old Clorox works well. Dilute it some and put that on, and you know, get the kind that doesn't have the odor, and it kills bacteria and viruses quickly. In fact, when I was a missionary in Kenya, we had trouble getting medications. We had Clorox was called Jeep there, and we would use that actually on wounds and drip it into bad ulcers and things like that, and it would clean them up very quickly. So this is powerful. Hypochlorite's what's in Clorox, and it's powerful for killing germs. So those type of steps can really make a difference and keep you healthy, and more importantly, those around you healthy.
Many wonder at such times as this, is it safe to travel like on an airplane or other public transportation?
The airplane industry has been hit by this, as well as cruise ships, severely. They're now talking about ghost flights. I guess the question to answer, would I still fly? And the answer is yes. They are now actually rubbing down table trays and armrests and window areas and all sorts of things on planes. If there's any evidence that someone has been there that's sick on the plane, they do even more than that. Actually, the air is very clean that goes through their system that comes in, so it's mainly touch. So don't be embarrassed to take a little bottle of antiseptic wipes and wipe down your handles and your tray table and other things that you're going to be in contact with on an airplane. But I would not stop flying at this point. There's some places in the world I wouldn't fly to, like Italy and China and other places, and it'd be hard to find a flight there now because airlines are not going. But otherwise than that, yes, do what's necessary for flying.
Does that antibacterial gel work?
It does. You need to have at least 60% alcohol. So look at the label when you buy it, and then if it's 60%, that works well. If you can't wash your hands, washing your hands is actually better, but this provides good protection as well. And I've got a little one I'm carrying in my pocket right now, very thin, and I can just squeeze some out and wipe my hands down with it. I just got back from the doctor's office, and I did that after I left. I was going to the ophthalmologist today to get some new glasses.
Hmm. What about public gatherings?
Public gatherings, I think we're overreacting in that arena already. It could be helpful, but there's so few cases around that the fact that there's going to be a huge contamination is a concern, but I don't think many of them need to be stopped. Some people are saying over 1,000 people. The main reason for that is if a case did happen, how do you trace all those people? How do you follow up contacts? So this would be spread to the group close proximity to you, not through the whole building. But the likelihood of having someone there that has the disease increases the more people that are in the room. But the incidence of it is so low already, I don't see, shutting down major schools and things like that, though they are doing it where there's higher incidence in Washington, California, and it might be wise, but we have colleges closed and there's no, and universities, and there's no cases on their campus at all, but they're going that far with this.
Again, our guest today is Dr. David Stevens. He's CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Doctor, there have been some reports saying that China has contained the outbreak now in their country, that the cases there are stabilizing. Are you able to either confirm that either way?
All we can do is take the reports that they give us. The foci now of where it's really increasing seems to be Italy and Iran. And Iran obviously is not delayed, you know, doing what was necessary to try to control this. They don't have a very good public health system, and it's really spreading fast there. And Italy now, tours and everything. So we had a tour going through some of the biblical sites in Italy, and we canceled that, even though it's in June. So, yeah, China, there's been concern that they may not be giving us accurate reports, but more and more data is coming out now, and I think it's fairly accurate.
So you believe as weather warms, as humidity increases, that's going to be that which is going to have an effective kill on this virus?
It does. Viruses don't do well in warm, especially warm and hot weather, and they don't do well in the humidity. They tend to, when you cough and stuff, go falling to the ground very quickly, so it's harder for them to spread. And we see this with the common flu. So will that happen with COVID-19? In all probability, when? Depends on where you are in the United States and when it's going to warm up. So we may, for some people, it's beginning already, and for other people, it's going to be delayed because they're in colder areas of the country.
You had mentioned earlier about the healthcare industry here across the nation, your confidence in the quality of our care. We understand that the health insurance companies have now agreed to waive test costs for the coronavirus.
Yes, and you know, I think that's wise. The best way to decrease health costs for insurance companies is to control this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting people tested is a good way to do that. You know, in China, in Korea, for example, where they were having a lot of cases, they had drive-by testing. You literally drove up in your car. They asked you some questions and did a coronavirus test on you if you desired one. We may get to that point. I don't think we need to be doing that now, but I mean, if this thing got away from us, that's one way. I've got a cold. Could you please check and make sure it's not the coronavirus? And they could report to you before you drove through. So it was drive-through coronavirus testing. That possibility is there. And right now, testing is mainly being done on people that are sick and having more severe respiratory symptoms. But I expect we're going to be seeing more testing across the U.S. as these close to a million test kits get distributed.
Does the rapid expansion that we've seen from China to these other nations, to the U.S., does that rapid expansion, does that surprise you?
It doesn't. Viruses passed on very quickly, especially when people don't have immunity. That's why we tell people to get flu vaccine, because it not only prevents them from getting the case, but also has one less person to transmit it to others if you do. And viruses are easily, through a sneeze or a cough, put into the air and land on surfaces, and people spread them all over the place. And so that's why we see, as you reported, the 18,000-20,000 deaths a year, 250,000 hospitalizations just from the plain old flu that we oftentimes in this country ignore. People don't even get a vaccine, but it can be deadly, especially to the same group as coronavirus, the elderly, those with chronic diseases, those that are immunocompromised, are the ones that really get hurt by the flu as well.
We're going to take a quick break. Dr. David Stevens is our guest, but I'm also opening the phone lines. No doubt, folks, you've got 101 questions you'd like to ask regarding this. Dr. Stevens, of course, looking at this through the medical perspective, our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. We invite you to get on board with your questions. We'll take as many as we can here today, 800-733-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
From Ray Comfort and Living Waters comes the dramatic film Audacity, tackling a very divisive issue today, homosexuality. Challenged by a co-worker to defend his convictions about homosexuality and same-sex marriage, Peter has to consider if he has the courage to stand for what he believes, even at the risk of losing a friendship. How will he respond when faced with a harrowing life or death experience? Audacity uses a unique approach to address a very contemporary issue and challenges the viewer to reach out and approach the greatest spiritual need everyone faces. Audacity is a 55-minute powerful dramatic film that will impact your life. Get your copy of Audacity for a donation of $5 or 5 copies for a donation of $18. 10 copies for $25 when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. David Stevens is our guest. He is the CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We're talking about the coronavirus. It's declared a pandemic today by the World Health Organization. And Dr. Stevens, before we pick up this first call here today, I was looking at some news, and there's a hospital, a Spirus Hospital out of Wausau, Wisconsin, where the representative said today, or reported in the paper today, prepare, don't panic. And I assume you agree with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're in an area where this is beginning to increase, you want to lay in some food so you don't have to go out of the house as much. Be very careful to be doing the proper things we talked about in the last segment, not going out if you're sick, not coughing on other people and not getting too close to them so they don't cough on you. And, you know, the basic things we do for the flu, cleaning surfaces and that type of things. But preparation is good. Your kids may be staying home from school if this gets out of control. So how are you going to handle that? If someone gets sick in your house, how are you, where are you going to put them? They should probably be using a separate bathroom and, only have one person bringing food and other things to them if someone came down with the coronavirus. All that information and that type of detail is available at cdc.gov, the Center for Disease Control, cdc.gov, has good lists, kind of what do you do if this is in your community, what do you do if this is in your home, what do you do just to prevent this from your contact with other people. So just stay tuned and be prepared, but there's no need to be afraid. You know, the chances of you dying of coronavirus is less than you driving the car to the grocery store today right now. So we just need to keep this in perspective and always remember God's in control. He doesn't give us this. We shouldn't have a spirit of fear, but of peace and a sound mind and realizing his power. Those things, as he talks about in 2 Timothy, are so key that we need to realize we can have the peace that passes understanding. If you go back into the Black Death, you know, that happened in the mid-ages, you know, people fled, left the cities, and this thing was highly contagious and very deadly, and the Christians stayed and took care of those that were sick. I think this, what's going on right now, is a tremendous opportunity for us as Christians to be witnesses to others and even lay down our lives, put them at risk. I've gone in as a physician into areas of epidemic. I've gone into war zones providing medical relief. And why can you do that? You can do that because God is with you, and he told us that's what we should do in these type of situations. When others fear, we still step forward to take care of others, putting them before ourselves.
And Dr. Stevens, do you have links through your website at all to CDC or anything on coronavirus yet on your site?
Yeah, cmda.org, cmda.org, and yes, CDC is able to keep up with it much closer than we are, though. That would be the first site I go to because that's being continually updated every day, multiple times a day on situations, and a lot of good resources there and links that will be helpful to you.
Well, our lines are packed. We're going to the phone lines right now. We're going to begin with Brian. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Yeah, I got a question and a comment. First of all, how, you were talking about surfaces, how long would the virus last on a surface, like a countertop?
Yeah, there's been studies to show viruses can last up to 9 hours. It depends on the humidity in your house and, you know, the temperature and all sorts of things, but they can last that long. If you use some sort of disinfectant, they don't last a couple seconds. Viruses really find that type of thing deadly. So cleaning them often is the thing, especially, you know, if it's just your family, and but they're bringing stuff in as well. I mean, they've been to school, the kids, you've
right.
been to work, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So doorknobs and things like that that you normally handle, light switches, those things can hold that virus for a good while.
Brian, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, what I was getting at is not the big venues, big gatherings and stuff. You mentioned not to really worry because it infects the people in their immediate area, but it also takes one infected person then to touch countertops, doorknobs, concession counters, and he could infect hundreds, if not thousands, at like a concert or a school or anything like that. I mean, am I wrong?
Well, kind of. Let's put it that way. People can get infection that way, but the more people that touch it, the less virus is there. So it's not like it's just there and 10 people touch it and all 10 of them are going to get it. That's not how it works. It's because it's rubbed off with your hands and all that type of stuff. So, yes, it's of concern, but I think at this point we've gone a little bit overboard to some of the things that are being done. May we get to the point where that's more important? As more important people get this and the incidence of it increases, then you move to those steps. But mm-hmm. some people move there a little earlier than I would recommend.
Thank you, Brian, for the call. Anna is our next caller. Anna, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I praise the Lord for you, for WBCY. The Migdal group in Israel, let's pray for them. They are working on disease control with the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And let's remember to wash our clothes and clean our cell phones as soon as we get home from working in the public. I work at a public child care mm-hmm. out here at Maranatha. And I'm loving it, but those kids and the families are out a lot right now.
Yeah. Dr. Stevens.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd have caught all that. I had a little trouble understanding. But, yes, cleaning, you know, stuff when you come home from work, like phones and things, especially if other people have handled mm-hmm. them. But washing your hands often, even at work, and using antiseptic gel if you can't do that.
Yeah, and nice. Also, would it not be good that we be praying for those who are working on a vaccine right now for this?
Absolutely, and praying for healthcare professionals
yeah.
that are dealing with this, those in public health and those actually in more affected areas mm-hmm. that are taking care of them. I have friends that work in China, serve in China, and you know, they dealt with this in huge proportions, and bathing them in prayer and prayer for others around the world, including those countries like Iran. A lot of innocent people are suffering there. My kids lived in Iraq for a while. They're neighbors from Iran, and we need to pray for people in other countries as well that are affected much more than we are at this point.
Thank you, Anna, for your call. We're going from Anna to Ann. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question I've always wanted to ask. I see a lot more people just, like, carelessly spitting all over anywhere they feel like doing it. And, you know, of course, then other people go here and there and stepping on it. And then we should all already take our shoes off at the door. But how long does a virus, or if they had one, last on that type of situation?
It depends on the surfaces. I mean, if you're on bottom of shoes and things like that, if you're out walking around, they may not last very long on the bottom. They may on the top, but spitting is not good anywhere, because germs, a lot of different germs can be passed that way onto other people, especially younger kids and things that play on the ground, play on the floor. So taking your shoes off is very customary in other countries when you enter a house, and not a bad idea here as well. It keeps the dirt off the floor. Mama's happy.
Thank you, Ann. Let's go to Marianne next. You're on the air, Marianne.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about the, I know that the vaccine security lady that you had on had said that there are no vaccines that have been developed that without the use of the aborted baby body parts
and DNA. No, that's not true, Marianne. She has not said that. There have been some that have used that, but that is not true of all vaccines.
Okay, what about the flu? Then can you let me talk to the doctor?
He's listening to you right now. Okay, Dr. Stevens, we've seen the use of fetal cells in some of the vaccines that have been made, I believe, chickenpox and so forth. Any indication that that's been true for the flu vaccinations or even in the development of this one?
No, absolutely not. And you know, people even need to understand that the fetal cells that were used are from an aborted fetus in a couple of those vaccines. It goes clear back to the 1960s. So it's not that more aborted babies' tissue is being used in vaccines. That hasn't occurred for over 50 years, or close to 50 years. So, you know, if people are interested in that topic, I would encourage them to go to our website, cmda.org. There's a, you can go to our public policy statements, and there's one on vaccines, which clearly outlines this, and the whole issue of moral complicity. When are you morally complicit in evil, which I think is important to understand, because there are limits to moral complicity. For example, won't get too far off on this, but much of our knowledge of anatomy came from grave robbers in the 1700s. Does that mean I shouldn't study anatomy books or use that information? No, because that was so distant. It's not continuing. So there's whole issue of when moral complicity takes place. And obviously, if babies were still being aborted and their fetal tissue used to make vaccines, that would be a huge issue. You may not want to take a vaccine that came from fetal tissues from abortion clear back in the 60s, but some people would say that was fine because that's not continuing.
Okay. Thank you, Marianne, for the call. And again, I want to stay more focused on our topic here today. Let's go to Gerald next in Ashtabula, Ohio. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question to the doctors. I take Holy Communion once a month with that disposable cup.
Is that a cup that others are commonly sharing?
Without anybody sharing it. Other church, they use one big cup.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody drink one big cup.
Okay. Doctor?
I wouldn't advise that.
Yeah.
You might want to talk to your pastor and find some other ways that they can serve communion. But with this going on, you know, it may be no problem at all, but it'd be very easy to put people at risk. And even if they wipe it with a towel, that doesn't completely clean it,
mm-hmm.
as I've seen pastors or priests do. So I wouldn't advise that in this time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Greg in Waukesha, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Doctor. Thanks for having the show today, Jim. I have a couple of different health conditions that weaken my immune system, and I'm also out and about a lot just because that's just my nature.
Mm-hmm.
When should I start self-quarantining, and if I should, and when should I, what kinds of things can I do besides washing my hands to keep and not, you know, shaking hands or not, you know, doing, I work with kids at my church.
We got it, Greg. We're down to a minute before the break. So, okay, Dr. Stevens, he's got a weakened immune system. Should he be involved in self-quarantine? What kind of guidance would you have?
If there are cases being found in your community, I would really reduce what you're doing and stay at home. It depends on how immunocompromised you are. If you're on anti-cancer drugs or drugs for whatever that has severely suppressed your immune system, the more depressed that is, the greater the risk you are for flu, coronavirus, and other diseases. And so an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and that doesn't mean you don't go out at all, but you don't get close to other people or where they're coughing or whatever.
Thank you for the call here, Greg. We're going to be taking a break here and then coming back to more phone calls. Dr. David Stevens is with us today. He is CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. You can find some information on their site or links from their site at cmda.org, cmda.org. Is also highly recommended checking out the Centers for Disease Control site at cdc.gov, cdc.gov. Our lines are packed, so we'll come back to more questions here following the break. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brennan House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Many in America are shocked at the rate at which their church organizations, denominations, and other Christian organizations have completely denied the faith. They are not only denying the faith, but now they're promoting socialism, social justice, globalism, interfaith dialogue with Jew-hating, Holocaust-denying, Hitler-defending, jihadi-preaching imams. How did this happen? The Bible says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? In all of these instances, whether it be a church, a Christian organization, a Christian denomination, or association, the first thing that happened is they denied the foundations of the faith, the fundamentals of the faith. Once they were moved off of the fundamentals of the faith and a biblical worldview, it was only a small step to their promoting the things of socialism, globalism, and mysticism. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House.
Our guest today on Crosstalk is Dr. David Stevens. He is the CEO Emeritus of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and we're talking about coronavirus. Today, it was declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization. We're talking about it, what it is, how to best protect yourselves, how does this spread, what about public gatherings. We've talked much about this, even comparing the flu statistics to this as well. And bottom line here is that of preparing and not panicking in this regard. Take precautions, yes, of course, and certainly exercise good, proper hygiene through it all. But taking your calls today, the questions you may have, our number is 800-733-9829. We're going next to Phoenix, Arizona. We have Joe calling. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Stevens. I'd like to say thank you. I have heard you speak as a member of CUNDA in the past and really appreciate your wisdom. My question is, do we know what do the experts know what the temperature range of the virus is, for example, in steam rooms or hot saunas or hot tubs?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. I haven't seen any studies on that. I would think it, as the heat goes up and the humidity goes up, it'd be less likely to be passed on, since that's the way flu-like viruses and other things decrease when it gets hot and humid. But, you know, even in just the local Y, gymnasiums and exercise rooms and all the rest of that, anywhere there's people, there's a greater chance of it being passed. But we got to remember that the incidence of it, I think there's two cases in my state right now, the less there is, the remoter the chances that you're going to get it from someone, whereas flu virus, for example, is all throughout the community, and you're probably going to be much more likely to be exposed to that, whatever you're doing, and the precautions are the same for both viruses.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If I can ask one more question.
Sure.
You know, I was just speaking with someone. I'm in one of the southern states, Arizona, where we have a lot of, we call them snowbirds, visitors from the north, the colder states for the winter, and then they return when the weather warms up to, like, Minnesota, Michigan, those states. The person mentioned that some of those states are not prepared to handle the return of these visitors because there's not a lot of access to health care. Any comments?
Yeah, that could be true, too. And, you know, as we've talked about heat and humidity affecting the viruses, they might want to stay a little longer this spring instead of going back into the areas where it's probably going to be more common. And that would just be wisdom. And those people that do this are usually retired, older, have more chronic diseases, higher risk. And, you know, staying a little longer where it's less prevalent, if that is the situation, would be, I think, a wise move this year until the incidence in their home state decreases.
Joe, thank you for the call here today. And Dr. Stevens, he brought up one issue even dealing, or you mentioned about exercise equipment. This is where it's even good to use one of those wipes to wipe down that equipment before utilizing it.
Absolutely. And everybody else is going to be doing it. You can just be part of the bunch.
Right.
I hope everybody else is doing it. Bring your little canister of wipes and wipe it down. I went to the ophthalmologist today. They wiped down the machines in the office before they examined my eyes.
Hmm. Diana is next in New Lisbon, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling because I had heard that China had this going on for a whole month before they even reported it to anybody, and it had a chance to take hold before anybody ever did anything about it. and I was wondering if that was true. And whatever happened with the Zika virus and the Ebola and all that stuff, that got blown way out of proportion back then, too. So
yeah. There's some evidence that this may have appeared as early as part of December. And we do know in China that some of the doctors that brought this up initially were ignored. In fact, one of them died of the virus himself, mm-hmm. taking care of those that were sick. So, yes, in retrospect, you can always have perfect vision, but there apparently were some things there that weren't very good. Viruses do disappear. There is Ebola virus now in Zaire, in eastern Zaire, but it's passed from monkeys. I mentioned earlier that this virus may have been passed from snakes in China to human beings because they eat snake there. It's considered a delicacy, and I've seen reports that that may have been the intermittent host. We know that these coronaviruses originally were carried by bats, but in the Mideast, they were passed on by camels, and in China, the SARS virus was passed on by civet cats. So that's where these things came from. But those viruses come and go. There's still a small incidence, but there's better treatment now and dealing with it and prevention of cases and isolating them better than was done originally in those instances.
Thank you, Diana. Let's go next to Cerise, calling in from Sarasota, Florida. You're on the air, Cerise.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question, and I don't know, if it's not been done yet, it must not be a good idea. But what about wearing gloves like they did in the old days to protect ourselves and others?
Okay.
And also, I've been hearing that in China, one of the ways they're cutting back on the virus spreading is they're giving huge doses of vitamin C or a vitamin C intravenous drip.
Okay. Let me... Doctor?
There's good studies to show that vitamin C doesn't prevent viruses. I haven't heard about them doing that in China, but I don't think, taking a multivitamin every day is a good idea for all of us, but I don't think huge doses of vitamin C are helpful and can be toxic if you take too large a dose. And the other part of the question was that?
Glove wearing.
Oh, glove wearing. Yeah, gloves can be helpful. That's why healthcare professionals wear them. But you have to know how to put them on and how to take them off, or you can contaminate yourself very easily, thinking that you protected yourself with the gloves and the virus is just on the gloves. So I wouldn't recommend at this point. We're not at the situation where this is a huge epidemic and, like the Black Plague was back in the medieval times. So I don't think that's necessary at this point.
Thank you, Cerise, for your call here. And we're sadly just down to 30 seconds here. Dr. Stevens, what do you want to leave with our listeners as it relates to the coronavirus?
Well, I think, remember, there's a Christian program. I trust those that are listening know Christ. Mm-hmm. We need to have faith, not fear.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your understanding and trust Him in this situation. And again, throughout the Bible, it says take courage and be willing to help others, even at risk to yourself. And so I think this is an opportunity for us to be a witness to others and how we approach this and showing them the peace that comes from God.
Dr. Stevens, thank you so much for being with us and addressing a very critical issue today here on Crosstalk.
It's my pleasure.
Dr. David Stevens, our guest here today, and stay on the line if you would for a moment, Doctor. The website, cmda.org, the Christian Medical Dental Association, cmda.org, and as Dr. Stevens recommended, too, staying informed through the Centers for Disease Control, cdc.gov. Thank you, folks, for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.